to do. So let's start here with me and you. Gonna take a little time. Let's see what we can find. Oh, come on, walk with me, talk with me.
Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We also rebroadcast this program on atozen.fm. You'll need to go to their website to find out the days and times that it is broadcast, because it is kind of moved from place to place, which is just fine because it gives all kinds of different people opportunities to listen to Tell Me Your Story. We archive the program at richarddugan.com, the radio show page. We also have a set of interviews that I have done over the months that are going to make it to the airwaves. It's just that I've done so many of them, there's just no way. You only have one Saturday a week. You only have an opportunity to do it in that regard. So they are there, and they are on the interviews page. That's right. There is a separate page that you go to. The radio shows page is just that. That is the programs that have aired. And the extra broadcast interviews is a list of interviews that I have done. And there is also an interviews page. So there are actually three places where you can listen to a variety of guests who are going to be on the radio program. And then not everybody has the internet. Not everybody has a smartphone. And I understand that. So those of you listening on the radio exclusively, they are coming. And maybe it'll give you incentive to at least maybe get access, maybe go to the library or something of that nature. I'd encourage you to do that. Today, I'm very excited about our program as well as our guest and our topic. Carolyn Gervais is the author of I Dreamed I Was Human. Interesting title just to start with. But she is also a metaphysical spiritualist, if you will. She is also ordained in the ministry, a spiritual psychologist and a certified hypnotherapist, and a master's degree in holistic nutrition. And we'll be talking about that as well. And I want to welcome you to our program. It's great to have you here today.
Thank you.
This is very interesting from my perspective, as far as number one, as we were chatting briefly before we started, I had to try to help some people to understand the definition of metaphysics and the metaphysical world, that it was not of the devil, that the definition is beyond the physical, which meant that whatever one believed was metaphysical. I mean, in the very broadest sense of the term. But you have studied in the area specifically of metaphysical spirituality, and that implies that there are other categories of metaphysics that that are still out there, of course, to be studied and researched. And metaphysics in and of itself, am I correct, has not been within the curriculum of some higher schools of learning? It hasn't been in there for very long, has it?
Probably not. It depends on the schools of the higher schools of learning that you're referring to. Different schools use different terminology, of mm-hmm. course.
So in terms of your study, obviously as a minister and so forth, and nowadays I guess just about anybody can be a minister, and it's actually recognized as you can actually apply for 501c3 status, I guess, but that doesn't necessarily make you a genuine minister. Tell me, from your perspective, why was it necessary for you? Why did you feel compelled to become a minister?
Well, I'm an ordained minister in spiritual psychology.
Mm-hmm.
All of my life, I've wanted to know the answers to why I was here, why us humans were even created, why we are on this earth, what is the purpose of it all. So from as far back as I can remember, those were the questions in my mind, even as a little girl. And so as I got older, I realized that the adults around me weren't going to be able to give me the answers to my questions because they didn't even know they had trouble just living their everyday life, let alone trying to tell me why I'm here and how I got here. So I learned early on that I'm going to have to find the answers myself through any avenue I can come up with that would have answers that would satisfy me in some way. So I began with my dad's metaphysical books. My dad dabbled in metaphysics, like Edgar Cayce, Ruth Montgomery.
Oh, yes.
I'm trying to think of them all. Jess Stern was even one. Norman Vincent Peale. Mm-hmm. Just all that's where I started. And I even read some books. Was her name Sybil? She was into white witchcraft.
Ah, okay.
And I read one of her books because I thought, okay, I'm going to read everything I can get my hands on that is out of the box, so to speak.
Yeah.
So that I can decide for myself what the common threads are through all of these teachings, so I can decide what really is more true than something else might be.
Right.
And that's why I read everything I could get my hands on. Plus, I learned something from everything I studied. And then I got into Eastern philosophy. And I stayed in that for quite a while. And because it seemed to have the answers that were deep enough for my questions.
Mm-hmm.
And so I studied that for a long time, and I even taught yoga, hatha yoga, and I've studied Western philosophy through anything from the Bible to different teachers like Wayne Dyer and people like that, you know, just everything I could get my hands on.
Yeah. Matter of fact, you made me think of a book that sadly I have lost over the years, partly through my divorce, was a book by Johannes Graeber called Communication with the Spirit World of God.
Oh, I've not heard of that one.
He was a Catholic priest in the 30s.
Wow.
Who became involved in channeling, which was certainly not part of the catechism that I learned.
I'm sure it wasn't.
And I remember reading this book, and it was the book itself was so neat to hold because it was printed on that very thin, almost like onion paper.
Oh, yeah.
And but it was a soft cover.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my first wife and I, we must have lent it to someone. And it was never returned. And I've tried to get another copy of it, which I did, but it's just not the same. There's something about that particular book.
Mm-hmm.
But what he was talking about, what was happening was the entity that he was channeling was giving, basically, I'll put it this way, especially from my mother's perspective at that time that I read it, was giving him grief about everything that Catholicism was and purported to be. And, of course, at that time, still having been born and raised in the Catholic Church, you know, my mother was none too happy with what I was reading in that respect. I wasn't living at the house at the time, but still, you know, we would communicate, and I shared this. It was interesting to me. It was one of the things that I've loved so much about my parents is that I would be able to go to them and share with them some of the things that I found, as long as I wasn't trying to proselytize. You know, I could share it, but I was not allowed to try to convince them that it was the truth.
Right.
And I know that's a big struggle with a lot of us. I myself started out with Paramahansa Yogananda's book. So yeah. I actually started out in the East, so
I
to speak.
I did, too. That was one of my very first books.
I'm rereading it again. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, I have it on my phone in audio files. And I'm listening to this if people see me around Santa Barbara and I only put one earbud in one ear. Because I want to hear what else is going on around me.
Right. Yeah.
But if you see me walking around with that one earbud, I'm probably listening to that book.
That's great. Yeah, I've read it a million times too.
Oh my gosh! And there's just something about it that's just to me incredible. And then, of course, again, you've mentioned Wayne Dyer, you've mentioned Edgar Cayce, Ruth Montgomery. There's another book called Joy's Way, talking about the chakras, and I was not aware that there were so many chakra points on the human body, not just the seven we talk about.
Hundreds.
Yeah, and I mean, and I have plastic containers under the house filled with books on metaphysics and spirituality and the esoteric and so forth.
Join the club.
I have, I don't know, maybe 8 or 10 versions of the Bible, all in English, of course, but you know, from different translators as well as from ones who've channeled it.
Have you ever read any theosophy teachings like Alice Bailey or Peruker, H.P. Peruker, I think that was, I can't remember for sure what the initials were, but those would go way back into the 30s.
Alice Bailey, I've heard of, I don't believe I've read. Of course, in Miracles is another one that comes into there. But I mean, you know, we just start rattling off all these different titles and these different people.
Yeah.
I think the thing that I loved about Edgar Cayce in particular was the fact that in spite of his own ego-centered protestations because of his beliefs, he still went ahead and did the things that he did. He still went ahead with the channelings.
Yes, he did.
And I thought, wow, that's got to be tearing him up inside from the personality side.
Right.
It's like,
right.
Oh my gosh, I have. And Johannes Graber, it was the same way.
Mm-hmm.
He had to fight the urge to stop. I don't think that the channels would have let him. But it kind of leads me into a direction. And I'm certainly, by the way, if you folks have just joined us, we're talking with Carolyn Gervais, and she's the author of The Dreamer. I Dreamed I Was Human. I Dreamed I Was Human. That's the title of the book. It's iUniverse Press. And fascinating information in here. I think that it would behoove anyone to pick up a copy because if I'm correct, it's really written to the earnest seeker. It's not just one of these books that you just can pick up. I mean, you could pick up Wayne Dyer's book,
right,
and read it, and it's no big deal.
Right.
But your book, inflate you by any means, but you can't just pick up Edgar Cayce's books and just read them. They're not, you know, casual stuff. This is for the serious individual who is, and it's not that the words are any different. It's just that a person's focus needs to be there and an intent. But I want to ask you about a concept from your perspective, especially when it comes to the spiritual aspects of who and what we are.
Mm-hmm.
We talk a lot on this program about listening to our intuition or whatever word you want to add, phrase or term, still small voice, the voice of God, higher consciousness, et cetera, et cetera. One of the things that has risen to my awareness is that when we start living in that realm where we're not just listening to but following the promptings of that voice, we choose, by doing so, we choose to give up our identity of the individual ego self. This is not about me anymore. I say on this program that when I do these interviews, I have no list of questions. The universe asks the questions. I'm just along for the ride.
Exactly.
Okay? And so when you give up your individuality, it's not that you are now an automaton being controlled by forces you do not understand. You've made a choice.
Yes.
You've chosen to go in this direction. And the reason I bring this up is because of all the brouhaha, especially here in the West, and specifically here in the United States, about, you know, liberty and freedom and surveillance and listening in on this and tapping into one's emails and all of the material aspects. And I'm thinking, okay, I understand where people are coming from from their personalities. But I'm sitting here, and I thought this way back early on in my Christian broadcasting days. Well, if God already knows, what difference does it make if 7 billion other people know? And besides, most of them don't even care.
That's right. That's true.
So help us to better balance this whole aspect of being part of the hologram, the whole, the following the promptings versus the other, because I do see it sort of as the other side of this gung-ho desire, need, fervor to be the individual, to have liberty and freedom and justice for all, and that construct that really you don't have to worry about when you're following those promptings.
When you're following the promptings of the human aspect?
No. Following the promptings of the higher self, the still small voice, God guiding you from within, if you will.
Right. Well, there are always challenges if you're choosing to do that. There are going to be people that are turned off by that or afraid of someone who says they are following their inner promptings.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it was an absolute need in order for me to find a way to stay here on this earth, because I found myself as a child on this earth, and I did not like it. I did not like the feel of it. And so I was, I had to find the answers to my questions, or I did not know how I was going to be able to live this human life like all the other, all the other humans were living their lives.
Mm-hmm.
I saw so many adults as a child. I could see how unhappy most adults appeared to be. They seemed to be disappointed with their lives, unhappy with their lives, discouraged. They too. I could just tell by watching people, and I did watch people constantly. They were my entertainment, and they were showing me something about life, and each person was showing me something maybe a little different. But I noticed how unhappy adults seemed to be, and I thought, is that what is going to happen to me when I'm an adult? Am I going to be unhappy too? Am I going to be angry a lot? Am I going to be sad a lot? Because you can see it in people's faces. I don't know. I would think a lot of people could if they were interested in looking that closely at someone's face.
Yeah.
I saw it, and it really bothered me, and I wanted to know why people seemed to be so unhappy. And as I got older, I started experiencing life, and I came from a very dysfunctional family, so I learned early on that life is not really all that happy, and I didn't know how I was going to make it happy when my own parents didn't know how to make their lives happy. So I began at 17 just reading everything I could, and I told God, I said, if you exist, if you are real, you're going to have to prove it to me. Because I don't believe it anymore, because I don't remember any prayer that you've ever answered for me that was really serious, like healing my family or making it so that, I had a hard time having friends, making friends in school as a child. Because I just didn't know how to fit in.
Yeah.
And so I always just stood back and watched it all. And it was very hard for me. And I was watching everything because I wanted to figure out, how am I going to learn how to live in this world in a way that is satisfying enough for me to want to stay here?
I can relate to those experiences myself. Matter of fact, as you're sharing, my mind's eye is seeing the grade school lockers and the playground and the things that I went through. I think that what's so interesting about, at least for me, about all of this is that in spite of the fact that I think you and I would both agree that we wouldn't be the people we are today had we not gone through what we went through growing up, that I acknowledge that.
Yeah.
At the same time, my sister's daughter had a baby back in September. I am a great uncle.
Mm-hmm.
My parents, who are both still alive, are great grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thought that went through my mind when I found out that she'd been born was, is she going to be facing the same nonsense that I went through, or even that my parents went through,
mm-hmm.
not just on the school grounds, but just in terms of in life,
right.
in terms of growing up and having to live the quote unquote the American dream of being the consumer producer. I mean, it's killing us.
Right.
It's destroying us as human beings. And it's got to change, and I'm just thinking, oh my gosh, maybe she's going to be one of the ones to change it. Who knows?
And I think that is determined by what she has brought in with her and what she somehow manages to remember about who she is as a spiritual being before she was even human. And she probably doesn't have any conscious memory of that, but maybe she does.
Yeah.
It just depends on the person.
Yeah.
And the other thing is how quickly and how easily it is to get trapped in the illusion.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. My gosh. That's one of the bugaboos that I have. You know, you're talking about asking all these questions as a child.
Mm-hmm.
This program has raised questions that I never thought of before. That now I can't get rid of. But one in particular has to do with this whole aspect of we came from the One,
mm-hmm.
we're going back to the One,
yes.
and we live here in this duality.
Yes.
And my question is, why? What is the point? And I keep hearing, well, we're just here to have experiences. And I still ask the question, what is the point?
The point is that we chose to live here. We were given free will the minute we were created to choose and decide and to create and recreate and manifest what we perceived or what we believed what would give meaning and purpose to life, human life.
Mm-hmm.
And when we agreed to that, we created through our perceptions, through our beliefs, everything we'd been taught. And that's the thing about when we come in as a human, we are being programmed by everything and everyone around us.
Yeah.
And that goes in and mixes with what we came in already programmed with through other existences elsewhere. And so that's the trick. That is the big problem with coming into human form. Unless you are determined, unless you somehow are so determined to remember who you are as this spiritual being after you come into human form, and let the earth or the society and the adults in the world reprogram you and tell you that that is all make-believe, that who you are beyond this human form is not real, this is what's real, then people forget, and then they go through all of these challenges and suffering and making choices that cause harmful consequences to where they're so confused they don't know which way is up.
Well, there are days. I have those days, you know.
Oh, well, so we all do. We all do, because we're in human form.
Exactly.
We are living in a duality.
But here's the interesting paradox. You and I, we ran off a litany of people and books that we have read that are now telling us that this is all an illusion.
Right.
As Lewis Black would say, it's all an illusion.
Right.
And you're all in a delusion. You're deluded. You think that all of this is real and it's not.
Right.
I mean, it's one of those things where I had my comeuppance not too long ago where I was remembering that when I was going through some challenges in my life. And I just kept, it's not real. This isn't real. This isn't real. This isn't real. Then things got really good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I got my comeuppance, because I had to say, this isn't real. This isn't real. This isn't real. This isn't real. Because you can't have one side real and the other side not real. If it's all, if this world is not real, then it's all not real, the good and the bad.
Right. It is real, but what is real? That's what we have to define.
That's the dilemma.
Right.
Yeah.
Real is what cannot be destroyed. Real is what cannot decay, die, or go away, disappear. It can... Real only changes the way it expresses through, it can be through another form, a different kind of form.
Yeah.
But that's what determines illusion from real. Wherever we are totally focused, whether it is completely through all of our five senses, that is real for now.
Yeah.
You know? And when we leave the five physical senses behind and go elsewhere, then that, where we go, is real. But until we have reached the ultimate of real, which is to once again be one with all things and all consciousness beyond this human existence,
mm-hmm.
then wherever we are focused becomes the temporary real.
Yeah. I Dreamed I Was Human. That is the book. My guest is Carolyn Gervais. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We want you to stay with us. We'll be back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
And you are listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I thank you for staying with us as we continue talking with Carolyn Gervais and her book, I Dreamed I Was Human. Let's talk a little bit about this. I mean, I was reading through this and I'm rather intrigued by some of the chapter headings and just the title alone kind of goes to maybe our conversation in the first segment in terms of the dream world that we're living, as is said by the Hindus, this is Maya or illusion, and that none of this is real. And yet, in a manner of speaking, we, from what I understand, we sort of kind of made a contract or some agreements before we came into this world, and we chose to come into this world. I've heard there are other dimensions that we could have chosen to go into, and you know, maybe in another lifetime we might do that. And we chose to be human, which implies that we could have chosen to be something other than human, some other species on the planet. But we chose this form. And also I've read about the divinity, the divine aspects of the human form because of what we'll refer to as the five extensions, the five-pointed star, the pentagram. And I mean, we could go on and on as far as all of the symbology that ties us to the divine, that ties us to the one that we referred to in the first segment. I guess the first thing might be the dream that you, in what context did you dream that you were human?
Are you asking me?
I'm asking you.
Okay. I didn't know you were asking. Okay.
Hey, it's just you and me.
Okay. All right. Now say that question again. I lost it.
In what context were you dreaming that you were human?
Well, I learned years ago through a lucid dreaming that everything, this is what I realize, is that everything is a dream. Anything that can be thought of is a thought, which the divine does as well. Divine consciousness has thoughts too, and this is what we create with. Of course, it's not the same kind of thought we have, but this is how we create where we find ourselves right now, through our thoughts, through our beliefs and imagination. Imagination and thought are basically the same thing, because what we can imagine can appear to be and become real, depending on whether it is being experienced through the five senses or even through the higher senses. It becomes real, at least for that moment in time. So anything that is real cannot die or go away. It can only change form. So I realized that through perception, through the ability to conceive and to have concepts and to bring thoughts together to form pictures and images, that these pictures and images and thoughts that created these perceptions or our perceptions cannot be absolute truth, because they are perceived through the illusion, within the illusion. And that's how we bring order to our lives, by perceiving this illusion and having beliefs about it. In this way, we say, okay, well, I believe this. Okay, I believe I'm going to have a great life, or I believe I'm Carolyn, because look at, I have this body. I can see it and experience it with all my five senses. So this is when I realized, because this is going to go away, this earth, this the five senses, the physical aspect, it's all going to go away and disappear. It will change form, but it will all go away and disappear. Me as Carolyn, you as Richard, will take on another form after you leave this form. And that is because it is a dream. We're dreaming it.
Mm. So when we sleep, I mean, in this dream, when we sleep,
yeah,
reminds me of that movie with Leo DiCaprio, and I can't recall the title, but it's the dreams within dreams within dreams within dreams, and they're able to get inside someone's dreams and gather information and so on and so forth. But in this dream, as we dream, can you tell us, where are we going, or what are we seeing? What are we experiencing in those dreams?
When we go to sleep?
When we go to sleep, yes.
We are still experiencing dreams, and we are still dreaming within the dream. And when we go to sleep, we are the mind is still active, or the subconscious is still active, and we are in touch with higher aspects of ourselves, and we are being taught, and we are being told things that it doesn't matter whether we remember them, because they are going into our subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
So we are being taught, and we are experiencing things in our dreams when we go to sleep at night, but we put pictures and words to those dreams, and those pictures and words probably have very little to do with what we were experiencing when we were asleep. But the human mind can only put pictures and thoughts and images to what we experience, so it steps it down, it dumbs it down to something that we can comprehend through our human mind when we wake up.
Isn't there something lost then in the translation?
Oh, yes, definitely. But what remains is the energy that we experienced in that experience. That remains with us on some level.
Okay, so acknowledgement, we're dreaming. And when we sleep in this dream, we're still dreaming.
Yes.
Where does the still small voice come in? Is that still part of the dream, or is that coming from outside the dream to help us to circumnavigate maybe out of the dream if we so desire?
That still small voice, if I understand you correctly, I call the soul aspect or the spiritual aspect of us.
Mm-hmm.
It is always informing us and teaching us and telling us, programming us to remember who we are.
Okay, but like the movie The Matrix, which I don't know if you've seen or not.
Yes.
They have that telephone within the Matrix. And so when it rings, you're now connected to a voice on the outside in the quote-unquote real world. They're not dreaming there.
Right. And we are when we go into those dreams. And when we are in touch with what you're calling the still small voice, mm-hmm. How do you know you're in touch with that still small voice?
I will give you an example I had just the other day.
Okay.
And it was extraordinary because I made the commitment years ago that I wouldn't just listen, but that I would follow the promptings.
Right.
And my wife had bought these blueberry muffins, and I had one in my jacket pocket, and I was walking down the street, and we have a number of homeless on the main street here in Santa Barbara, and mm-hmm. I walked past this man who wasn't asking for anything. He was just standing there. Mm-hmm. And I walked on by. But I'd had this thought, you know, why don't you just give him the blueberry muffin? I'm sure, because you're just going to throw it away. You've already had your breakfast. You went to this restaurant and you had breakfast. And you're just going to throw it away. Well, I thought, I don't know. It's not what I do, okay, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I walked another block. I was a block away from the radio station. I'd also passed by this kind of like a wind chime, but it
right.
wasn't going to make chimes or anything. Mm-hmm. And there were two pieces of polished, dulled, edged glass hanging to keep it to give it some weight, and it was for free and take it and enjoy it and pay it forward kind of thing. And I crossed the street. I didn't take the thing. I didn't take the hanging thing. I got across the street, and I'm the prompting is like, there was almost like, I'm not going to make you feel guilty, but you did say that basically you were going to listen to and follow. I thought, oh my gosh. So I turned around. I walked past the hanging thing again. I walked all the way back. I circumnavigated around, came back up the same way that I had the first time. I stopped in front of him and I said, could you use a blueberry muffin? And he said, sure, God bless you, thank you. And I walked on. Now I have my earpiece in one ear, but I don't have it in the other, right? Mm-hmm. Right behind me was a woman who walked up to him and said, could you use a cup of coffee?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't turn around. I just kept right on walking. And she ended up walking past me.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't say anything. We didn't exchange a glance or anything. But I thought, wow, the synchronicity. And if I had not struggled with that, walking that block and eventually turning around, that would not have happened.
Right.
And he would have not had the same kind of, shall we say, morning breakfast that most everybody in the Starbucks on the corner was having,
mm-hmm.
a coffee and a pastry.
Mm-hmm.
And then I picked up, I managed to get that hanging thing, and I took it home.
Okay. And you listened to that small, that...
Yeah, that
small
prompting.
Voice, that prompting, and you're saying that is that still small voice. Well, that is the voice of our, what I call, two, the spiritual aspect of
mm-hmm.
us, because that spiritual aspect or the soul or whatever you want to call it, life force energy,
right.
Life force energy.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about giving, because that's what that this life force energy does that created us. It is giving. It is giving. Mm-hmm. And in the giving, we receive.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are always being asked to do that, but we don't always listen.
But that's beyond the dream, isn't it? That's my question.
Well, it is and it isn't, because okay. It's all one anyway.
Sure, sure.
It's all one any. The dream is an illusion, so therefore there's no separation between us and that still small voice. There's no separation between us and who we really are beyond the human aspect.
I have that, but I guess what I'm saying is that the dream that I'm living in, the physical world that I'm walking around in, even though indirectly that spiritual aspect created it through us physically, it's not actually a part of the dream in that context. I do get where you're coming from. We can't compartmentalize it, is the bottom line.
You can't separate it. Because if you do, then you are creating separation in all areas.
And then you're increasing the delusion.
Right, and then you're increasing the delusion that we are separate beings. Yes. So, no, you can't really separate it. It's all one.
Okay.
And it's all one energy, and it's like this soup.
Yeah.
Of soup of energy, and out of that soup comes all of this that we can see and even comprehend.
So out of all of the forms that we can imagine, and some that we can't even imagine, in the universe, in all of the dimensions of this vastness that we call the universe, why this form? Why that which we call human, as opposed to something else?
Because apparently we wanted to experience something the requirement was to be in human form, which is, number one, separation. Mm-hmm. We wanted to experience what separation would feel like when we bought into the illusion that we were all separate from each other and even separate from what created us.
So it isn't just about having an experience in living this life. It's more having the experience of being separate. So in one aspect, so as to foster the desire to be united.
That's true. But the creative aspect instills in us the desire to experience all that we can possibly be and are.
Now, that opens up, and I say this in a positive way, that opens up a Pandora's box.
That opens up what?
A Pandora's box.
Well, yes, in a way it does, because we were given the free will to create, co-create, do whatever we wanted, and experience every aspect of everything we could imagine ourselves to be or not be. And that is why we are here. This is why we find ourselves there. But this isn't the only place where we are.
Right.
We're everywhere.
Right.
And we're all experiencing everything that we are choosing to experience in each moment of every existence.
This is quite extraordinary, because up to this point, I'm actually able to, for the most part, wrap my brain around all of this. For the most part.
Yeah. Good.
And these are the kinds of dialogues that I absolutely love. I don't know whether I'm right or you're right. Doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't
it's
matter.
Just that the conversation elicits images that, and this goes back to what you said earlier, it elicits the images that, yes, I could describe, but if I could just show you the images.
Right.
And yet, what you just stated is that that is possible if we could just learn how to do that. In my rereading of Autobiography of a Yogi, I think of the one experience that Paramahansa had of total 360-degree experience of the world around him.
That's right.
It's like, okay, you've described it to me, but that's nothing compared to actually experiencing it.
Yes.
or describing a helicopter ride that my wife and I took back 2 weeks ago over the city of Santa Barbara and over the ocean and over the land and the mission and so forth. I can show you the video. That's as close as I can get you. I can get you. That's closer than me trying to describe it.
Right.
But it's not as close as if you experience it yourself.
Right. Well, I have experienced oneness. I have many, many times in my life through deep meditation, mm-hmm. and even out of body experiences.
Wow.
And so I do know firsthand that everything is one, and what that feels like and what that looks like, and how it can be only explained with human words. But unless you experience it, it's not an absolute.
Yeah.
It's only a perception.
Greg Braden and I have chatted over the last 15, 18 years on this program and others. And one of the things that I loved most about what he had said, and I'd like you to elaborate on this concept,
okay.
is when we were talking about belief becoming knowing.
Yes.
Now, I believe that there is a supreme being or a oneness or however we want. I mean, and the way I describe it is it's a hologram. And I saw a film in school when I was going to school where they put a holographic image on a piece of glass and then they broke it. And that large image of the building was on every little fragment of the piece of glass. And so from that concept, I can visualize, yeah, okay, I'm part of the one. But he talked about how that's the next part of the next level in our evolution is going from belief, having a belief in something, to actually knowing. And you have had the experience, so now you don't have the belief in the one, you know. Is that a fair assessment?
Oh, yes, exactly. I know. And knowing is only there once you've experienced in an absolute way.
Right.
That can't be explained away.
And at the same time, I'm sure there is, obviously because of the book and the work that you're doing, you're wanting to share this awareness that you have, this knowingness that you have. And my guess is there's a certain part of you that says, and the words are getting in the way.
Yes, and that's why my book is what you say. It's not for the light.
Yeah.
It's got some... I dig inside myself or this... Whenever I ask a question... It's not an easy question, because I've been through all the easy questions.
Yeah.
Now I'm asking the really, really hard questions.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always do get an answer. Now, is that the ultimate answer? Well, it's the ultimate answer to where I am at this moment in my awareness, but that answer will change.
Isn't that the kicker?
Yeah.
It's like, great. And I'm going to have to ask this question again in 20 years. But then again, my awareness will have hopefully broadened as well.
That's right. That's right. And so, but once you experience it on an inner level, anything on an inner level, it becomes who you are and it expands who you are.
Now, you have been like this all your life.
Like what?
Well, seeking.
Yes, seeking
searching.
My entire life.
I have to say that officially my search began when I was 17, and my primer is Autobiography of a Yogi.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I'd had, little things happen in my life up to that point that I look back on and go, that was kind of interesting. And
sure.
Some of them were dreams, and they felt very, very real.
Mm-hmm.
And others were not dreams. When I was in the sleep state, that were kind of extraordinary. But I'm curious as to, since you have been a seeker all of your life, Where does your husband fit into all of this? Because I can't imagine myself being partnered with someone who is not of like mind.
He is of like mind.
That has to be, quite honestly, that has to be great fun.
Oh, it's a blessing.
Yeah.
He's the first person in my life who gets me, totally gets me, and he's right there with me. Of course, we've been married for 35 years, so...
That helps.
It was a gradual process
yeah.
for him. I mean, you know, I introduced him to all this stuff, and you know, he fought me for a few years. But you see, he couldn't dismiss that it made sense what I was telling him. How do you say it? It not just made sense. He could actually see it and feel it.
Yeah, I would grab a word from a book I'm still working on reading, and it's also in one of those big plastic cases under the house. from the book Stranger in a Strange Land, he is probably on the verge of grokking what you are going through. I think that the hardest thing for me has always been when, because I've never asked anybody when I've shared these concepts with, you must think I'm crazy. I've never said that to anybody. I've had that comment made to me with people sharing me who are of like mind. Mm-hmm. You probably think I'm crazy. You probably think I'm absolutely nuts. No, I don't. Matter of fact, when I was working for the Christian radio station, it took me a little while to get to this point, but I finally got to the point where there was no way I was going to be able to say to anybody who shared an experience with me, you're crazy, or no, that didn't happen. Because they experienced it. And who
right.
am I to sit there and pass judgment on their experience just because it doesn't match up with,
right.
you know, what it says in some book?
Exactly. Exactly. We cannot judge what other people experience. We can only connect with what we have experienced and take that to heart. And if it's, and it's going to be different.
Yeah.
People are going to experience similar things in different ways, a multitude of ways. And a lot of times, because of books, people think that if they don't experience the way this person experienced it, then they're not doing it right, or they're not going to do it. And that's not true. We can only experience according to the level of our awareness in each moment. So we will not be given anything that we aren't ready to hear.
Right.
Or experience, because it won't work anyway.
Yeah.
We won't experience it.
Right.
And so we don't have to be afraid of what we're going to experience, because what we experience is what we have chosen and agreed to experience, and we are ready to experience, or it would not be there.
I think it's the same concept as people wanting answers to all of their various questions now. And as is so poignantly put in Paramahansa's book, basically it would fry you.
It would fry you. You would not be. This is what I tell people. When you are ready to know the answer to a question you have, you will get the answer. But it will only coincide with where you are in your awareness right now. That is not the ultimate answer. The answer keeps getting growing and expanding as we grow and expand.
Yeah. By the way, the word you use, coincide, is one of the ways in which I pronounce the word coincidence.
Okay.
People will say coincidence. I say, no.
Coincidence,
because that's what it is. These two things that coincide, they come together, and there's a reason why. Even
right.
if we don't know what it is, there's
right.
a reason.
And that's what we have to stop doing. Stop judging everything we experience as good, bad, or indifferent. Whatever we are experiencing, we need to look at that as a gift.
Yeah.
Because this is the universe saying, here, I'm going to give you this opportunity to grow.
And that's fascinating, because I love how one interview dovetails into another, into another, into another. The conversations that I've had in the last few weeks have had to do with just that, that if I choose to accept that, yes, I'm here to experience.
Right.
You know, and not just to understand that, I want to get back to the one, and I've got to figure out how to do that.
Yeah, don't let anything bad happen. Don't make it painful.
Exactly. I was told that if we're here to experience, then that's all they are. There's no judgment. It's just an experience.
And we didn't do anything bad to deserve it.
Exactly. And yet, somewhere along the way, and I would like to find the person who started this whole thing.
Yeah. Me too.
Because Adam and Eve, if let's just say for the sake of argument, okay? For the sake of argument, let's just say they were the first two people.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't come into this world with that awareness.
That's right.
So who is responsible? I want to meet with them and straighten them out.
They are, because they chose.
Well, that's true, but then we took it on.
Because
we took it on and we passed it on.
Them. Yes.
Exactly. Exactly. And now we're going through the process
of going back.
Of going back individually. And then we're wanting to share that, as you are here with your book, I Dreamed I Was Human.
Okay.
We're now going back and saying, hey, this isn't working for me. This is not serving me. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you that I have to give an immense amount of credit to my parents. Especially my mother, because at the age of 16, I came home from delivering the Sunday morning paper, and I was there in bed, and she's time to get up to go to church. I don't want to go. And she said, okay. Now, in the past, she would make me get up and get dressed to go. Mm-hmm. And I'm exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
And it was years later I finally asked her, why did you do that? And she says, because I didn't want you to turn away from the church. Now, I am not a practicing Catholic, which is fine. But I never, in spite of what other people might think, I never left the church.
Mm-hmm.
I went on to pursue other things.
Right.
And I still carry that with me.
That are still related to spiritual awareness.
And are still very fond memories.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that it's sad that other people have had such set bad experiences in their early spiritual growth and their lives, that now they have to work through that stuff.
Right.
But again, it all goes back to the same thing that you've been saying over and over and over again in this program, that it's their responsibility.
Right. We chose whatever brought this experience.
Yeah.
So we need to own up to it and say, okay, I take responsibility for this whatever experience that's in my life right now, and I am going to find my way through it, not around it or over it, but through it, and learn more about who I am.
I want to ask you, what do you think you have accomplished thus far in your life?
In which way?
In terms of being a metaphysical spiritualist or a student of metaphysical spiritualism.
Well, I can say that every year of my life, I have grown and my awareness has expanded because it meant everything to me. It was what I woke up every morning for.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can say that every year of my life, I know that my awareness is expanding, and how far that goes is endless, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But I know it's expanding, and I know that where I am at this point in my life is, if I can help somebody to find out more about who they are beyond the human aspect, without all the pain I went through and all the struggling and the challenges that I went through, then that's what I'm going to do. And that is why I have been working towards this my whole life.
Yeah.
To write this book. I knew I was in training. I've been in training. And I'm not saying this is the ultimate answer to everything.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm saying that this are my answers.
Yeah.
This is what I found out
And you had mentioned, before we started our interview, one author and book that actually speaks to that whole aspect of the necessity for you writing this book from your perspective.
Right.
Celestine Prophecy by James Redfield.
Right.
Where in that, the basic premise is that we all have messages for one another. And if we don't give those messages to one another, then we can't continue to put the puzzle pieces together to get a better understanding of the big picture, if you will.
Exactly. Yep.
I mean, we deny ourselves and we deny others.
And we are all helping. We all help each other. We're not all here by accident. We're all here. We are in this agreement that... even if helping each other means doing something that causes pain, that doesn't mean that sometimes we agree to let somebody cause us pain because it's going to open us up to what we need to wake up to and be responsible for within ourselves.
I was thinking, too, about a conversation I had with my younger brother. We were walking in the desert outside of an Elks Lodge down in the rural part of Arizona where my grandparents live. Mm-hmm. And we were just having a really nice chat. And I shared with him some insights, to which he responded, well, it's – and I think I was 33, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I shared these insights with him, and he says, well, it's about time you got it. To which I responded, it's not about when you get it. It's that you get it.
Exactly.
And it may take you 30 or 60 or 90 years. Mm-hmm. And you may not get it in this lifetime.
Right.
Which brings up an interesting conversation about reincarnation.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems to me like, you know, in this lifetime, I'm looking at, I really only want to go through grade school and high school once.
Oh, well, yeah.
And that would be a nice dream.
Yes.
No pun intended.
Right.
But what about the play of reincarnation in this whole equation?
Well, see, I don't see it as reincarnation. I see that all aspects of us in all forms are going on, as in the form of lifetimes, are all going on all at once. They're just happening on a little bit different frequency level. That's why when Paramahansa said in his book he could experience everything full circle around him, it's all going on at once. That's so therefore, it's just on a little bit different frequency. And there's a reason for that. If we were to be able to constantly see what these other aspects of us are doing and experiencing and all of their challenges, we would become so confused on whose problem is whose, that we wouldn't be able to figure out our own issues and our own problems.
Yeah.
So it's possible to see, to tune into some of these other frequencies. I have done it myself while I'm awake even. And see how another aspect of us lives. Usually when that happens, it's because whatever is going on in this here and now, right now, is triggering something that is similar going on in another aspect of us.
Right.
And there can be some exchange of information, consciously or unconsciously, and that will help.
Yeah. We're just about out of time, and I wanted to ask you, going back to obviously delving into the connection that you and your husband have, what about your children? Where are they in relation to this like-mindedness? Or have they gone off on their own paths, which, again, I'm sure from your perspective, as a metaphysician, is perfectly fine. They're responsible for their lives.
Well, I have two children, and both of them are very into this.
Mm-hmm.
They were raised with it because I've been in it, you know,
mm-hmm.
for so long. Now, one of them has gone off on a path that has taken him off of this path somewhat, this spiritual path, at what he's been taught all of his life,
mm-hmm.
because he's now experiencing some experiences that he has brought in with him that need to surface at this time in his life.
Ah.
And it's pushed him off path a little bit. But I look at it as that's okay, because we all have to do that.
Some would then say maybe that, well, that's part of his path.
That is part of his path.
Yeah.
But what he's been taught right now has been kind of put on a back burner, some of it, not all of it, but some of it, until he gets straightened out in his mind what he has to do to get through what he's going through right now.
You know, it is the Old Testament passage, train a child up in the way he should go, and when he gets old, he shall not depart from it, is a double-edged sword. Because on the one hand, you look at a child and you make that statement and you say, okay, then I want to train this child up. You then look at an adult and you make the same statement, and it explains why that adult is the way the adult is. Because that's the way that the child was trained.
Yes.
And it just, it's, I'm often befuddled when when I hear on the news these various individuals who carry out these various acts, whether they be politicians or, you know, gunmen. I'm not surprised.
Right.
It doesn't shock me in the least.
No.
And ergo, I don't really follow the news that closely, in spite of working for news talk stations for years, because the news is the same. Just change the names, the dates, and the locations.
Right.
The acts are the same century after century after century.
Yes, they are.
So why do I need to keep hearing it over and over and over again? I know that, sadly, we're still not, we haven't learned how to behave.
Yes.
In that respect. But again, it goes back to, hey, each one of us is responsible.
Yes.
I want to wrap up our program here by asking you, who is Carolyn Gervais?
Who is Carolyn Gervais? How do I answer that? In what respect? Give me a hint.
In whatever respect comes to you.
I am a person that... that I can say has lived my whole life to try to understand it. And that's who I am. This is what I am. What I can find out about life and why it exists and how it works in order to help others to maybe bring more order and harmony to their lives. And in that process, will also bring more harmony into my life.
And even though you've answered this question throughout the interview, I'll ask the question directly. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I just want to be able to leave what I have discovered when I leave this earth, so that I know that I gave my very best, the best that I had to give on this earth, in hopes that somehow it will help uplift and maybe help the awareness level of humanity to somehow expand and people have more harmony and peace in their lives because of it.
Well, Carolyn, I want to thank you so much for sharing your time with us and your book, I Dreamed I Was Human. It is by iUniverse Press, and it is available, of course, at your website, which, by the way, your website is?
AwakeningU.com, Y-O-U. And that's my personal website, and you can find out more about me and my services on that website and my book. And then I have a website for my book. It's called I Dreamed I Was Human.
Well, I encourage folks to go to, and again, it's AwakeningU, Y-O-U, .com, where they can find out more about you and your book, I Dreamed I Was Human. Carolyn, again, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, I did want to mention, too, they can order the book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. They don't have to go to my website.
Okay. Well, wonderful. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Again, my guest has been Carolyn Gervais and the author of I Dreamed I Was Human. Until next week, love, Talal.